Reading from Bridge of Birds, a novel of an ancient China that never was, by Barry Hughart. Chapter 5 of Goats, Gold, and Miser Shen. A spring wind is like wine, wrote Chang Chu. A summer wind is like tea. An autumn wind is like smoke. And a winter wind is like ginger or mustard. The breeze that blew through Peking was tea touched with smoke and spiced with the fragrance of plum, poppy, peony, plane trees, lotus, narcissus, orchid, wild rose, and the sweet-smelling leaves of banana and bamboo. The breeze was also pungent with pork fat, perspiration, sour wine, and the bewildering odors of more people than I had dreamed there were in the whole world. The first time I was there, I had been too intent upon reaching the Street of Eyes to pay much attention to the Moon Festival, but now I gaped at the jugglers and acrobats who were filling the air with clubs and bodies, and at girls who were as tiny and delicate as porcelain dolls, and who danced on the tips of their toes upon enormous artificial lotus blossoms. The palanquins and carriages of the nobility moved grandly through the streets, and men and women laughed and wept in open-air theaters, and gamblers screamed and swore around dice games and cricket fights. I envied the elegance and assurance of the gentlemen who basked in the practiced admiration of sing-song girls, or tiptoed into the alley of 400 forbidden delights if they wanted more action. The most beautiful young women that I had ever seen were pounding drums in brightly painted tents as they sang and chanted the flower drum songs. On almost every corner I saw old ladies with twinkling eyes who sold soft drinks and candied fruits while they cried, "Ayi! Ayi! Come closer, my children! Spread ears like elephants, and I shall tell you the tale of the great Er Lang, and of the time when he was devoured by the hideous transcendent pig." Master Li had sharp elbows. He moved easily through the throngs, followed by yelps of pain, and he pointed out the landmarks and explained that the strange sounds of the city were as comprehensible to urban ears as barnyard sounds were to mine. The twanging of long tuning forks, for example, meant that barbers had set up shop, and porcelain spoons rapping against bowls advertised tiny dumplings and hot syrup, and clanging copper saucers meant that soft drinks made from wild plums and sweet and sour crab apples were for sale. As he moved toward his destination, I assumed in my innocence that he was intending to acquire some money by visiting a wealthy friend or a moneylender who owed him a favor. I blush to admit that not once did I pause to consider the state of the bamboo shack in which I had found him, or the nature of friends that he was likely to have. I was quite surprised when he turned abruptly from the main street and trotted down an alley that reeked of refuse. Rats glared at us with fierce, glittering eyes, and fermenting garbage bubbled and stank. And I stepped nervously over a corpse, or so I thought, until I smelled the fellow's breath. He was not dead, but dead drunk. And at the end of the alley, the blue flag of a wine cellar hung above a sagging wooden shack. I later learned that the wine shop of One-Eyed Wong was the most notorious in all China, but at the time I merely noticed that the low, dark room was swarming with vermin and flies, and that a thug with a jade earring that dangled from one chewed earlobe did not approve of the product. "You Peking weaklings call this watery piss wine," he roared. "Back in Suzhou, we make wine so strong that it knocks you out for a month if you smell it on somebody's breath." One-Eyed Wong turned to his wife, who was blending the stuff behind the counter. "We must add more cayenne, my turtle dove."
222 transcendent miseries," wailed Fat Foo. "We have run out of cayenne."
"In that case, O light of my existence, we shall substitute the stomach acid of diseased sheep,"
One-Eyed Wong said calmly. The thug with the earring whipped out a dagger and lurched around the room, savagely slashing the air.
"You Peking weaklings call these things flies?" he yelled. "Back in Suchow we have flies so big that we clip their wings, hitch them to plows, and use them for oxen."
"Perhaps a few flattened flies might add bouquet,"
One-Eyed Wong said thoughtfully.
"Yours is genius of the highest order, O noble stallion of the bedchamber."
"But flies are too risky," said Fat Foo. "They might overpower our famous flavor of crushed cockroaches."
The thug did not approve of Master Lee.
"You Peking weaklings call these midgets men?" he howled. "Back in Suchow, we grow men so big that their heads brush the clouds while their feet are planted upon the ground."
Indeed, in my humble village," Master Lee said sweetly, "we grow men so big that their upper lips lick the stars while their lower lips nuzzle the earth."
The thug thought about it.
"And where are their bodies?"
"They are like you," said Master Lee, "all mouth."
His hand shot out, a blade glinted, blood spurted, and he calmly dropped the thug's earring into his pocket, along with the ear that was attached to it.
"My surname is Lee, and my personal name is Cao. There is a slight flaw in my character," he said with a polite bow. "This is my esteemed client, Number 10 Ox, who is about to strike you over the head with a blunt object."
I wasn't quite sure what a blunt object was, but I was spared the embarrassment of asking, when the thug sat down at a table and began to cry. Li Cao exchanged a bawdy joke with One-Eyed Wong, pinched Fat Foo's vast behind, and beckoned for me to join them at a table with a jar of wine that was not of their own manufacture.
"Ox, it occurs to me that your education may be deficient in certain basic aspects of human intercourse, and I suggest that you pay close attention," he said.
He placed the thug's jade earring, which was quite beautiful, upon the table.
"A lovely thing," he said.
"Trash," sneered One-Eyed Wong.
"Cheap imitation jade," sneered Fat Foo.
"Carved by a blind man,"
sneered One-Eyed Wong.
"Worst earring I ever saw," sneered Fat Foo.
"How much?"
asked One-Eyed Wong.
"It is yours for a song," said Master Lee. "In this case, a song means a large purse of fake gold coins, two elegant suits of clothes, the temporary use of a palatial palanquin, and suitably attired bearers, a cart of garbage, and a goat."
One-Eyed Wong did some mental addition.
"No goat."
"But I must have a goat."
"It isn't that good an earring."
"It doesn't have to be that good a goat."
"No goat."
"But you not only get the earring, you also get the ear that is attached to it," said Master Lee.
The proprietors bent over the table and examined the bloody thing with interest.
"This is not a very good ear," sneered One-Eyed Wong.
"It is a terrible ear," sneered Fat Foo.
"Revolting," sneered One-Eyed Wong.
"Worst ear I ever saw," sneered Fat Foo.
"Besides, what good is it?"
asked One-Eyed Wong.
"Look at the vile creature it came from, and imagine the filth that has been hissed into it."
Master Lee bent over the table and whispered,
"Let us assume that you have an enemy."
"Enemy," said One-Eyed Wong.
"He is a wealthy man with a country estate."
"Estate?"
said Fat Foo.
"A stream flows through the estate."
"Stream," said One-Eyed Wong.
"It is midnight. You climb the fence and cleverly elude the dogs. Silent as a shadow, you slip to the top of the stream and peer around slyly. Then you take this revolting ear from your pocket and dip it into the water, and words of such vileness flow out that the fish are poisoned for miles, and your enemy's cattle drink from the stream and drop dead on the spot, and his lush irrigated fields wither into bleak desolation, and his children splash in their bathing pool and acquire leprosy, and all for the price of a goat.
Fat Fu buried her face in her hands.
10,000 blessings upon the mother who brought Li Cao into the world, she sobbed,
while One-Eyed Wong dabbed at his eyes with a filthy handkerchief and sniffled,
Sold!
In the country, my life had been attuned to the rhythm of the seasons, and things happened gradually. Now I had entered the whirlwind world of Li Cao, and I believe that I was in a state of shock. At any rate, the next thing that I remember was riding through the streets with Li Cao and Fat Fu in a palatial palanquin, while One-Eyed Wong marched ahead of us and bashed the lower classes out of the way with a gold-tipped staff. One-Eyed Wong was dressed as the majordomo of a great house, and Fat Fu was attired as a noble nurse. Master Li and I dazzled the eyes in tunics of sea-green silk, which were secured by silver girdles with borders of jade. The jeweled pendants that dangled from our fine tasseled hats tinkled in the breeze, and we languidly waved gold-splattered Sichuan fans. A servant brought up the rear, dragging a cart filled with garbage and a mangy goat. The servant was a thug of low appearance, with a bandage around his head, and he kept whimpering,
"My ear!"
"The house of Miser Shen," said Fat Fu, pointing ahead to a large, unpainted building, in front of which cheap incense burned before the statues of the Immortal of Commercial Profits, the Celestial Discoverer of Buried Treasures, the Lord of Lucrative Legacies, and every other greedy deity in the heavenly ministry of wealth.
Miser Shen owns 8 flourishing businesses, 6 houses in 6 different cities, 1 carriage, 1 sedan chair, 1 horse, 3 cows, 10 pigs, 20 chickens, 8 savage guard dogs, 7 half-starved servants, and 1 young and beautiful concubine named Pretty Ping, said Fat Fu. He acquired all of them by foreclosing mortgages.
Ahead of us was an old peasant with a mule that was hauling a stone-wheeled cart that belonged in a museum.
"Manure!" he shouted in a quavering, melancholy voice. "Fresh manure!"
Inside the house, a rasping voice exclaimed, "Stone wheels! Stone wheels in Peking!" Shutters flew open, and an extraordinarily ugly gentleman stuck his head out.
"Great Buddha, they are stone wheels!" he yelled,
and he vanished inside the house. A moment later I heard him scream,
"Cook! Cook! Don't waste a second!"
And then the front door crashed open, and Miser Shen and his cook raced outside and fell in behind the ancient cart. They were carrying armloads of kitchen cutlery, which they began to sharpen against the slowly revolving stone wheels.
"At least 2 copper coins saved, master," the cook cried. "What a bonanza!" howled Miser Shen.
"Manure!" cried the peasant. "Fresh manure!"
Another pair of shutters flew open, and Fat Fu pointed toward a heart-shaped face and a pair of luscious almond eyes.
"Pretty Ping," she said. "Pretty Ping owns 1 cheap dress, 1 cheap coat, 1 cheap hat, 1 pair of cheap sandals, 1 pair of cheap shoes, 1 cheap comb, 1 cheap ring, and enough humiliation to last 20 lifetimes."
"More cutlery!" howled Miser Shen. "Bring the hoes and shovels, too!" 1,000,000 mortifications, moaned Pretty Ping, and the shutters slammed shut.
Manure!
The old peasant cried. Fresh manure!
The heat, Master Lee panted, fluttering his fan in front of his face.
The stench, the noise.
Our lord is weary and must rest,
Fat Fu shouted to One-Eyed Wong.
Even this pig pen will do, Master Lee said weakly.
One-Eyed Wong rapped Miser Shen's shoulder with his gold-tipped staff.
You there, he bellowed. 1,000 blessings have descended upon you, for Lord Lee of Kao has condescended to rest in your miserable hovel.
Eh? Said Miser Shen, and he gaped at the gold coin that One-Eyed Wong slapped into his hand.
Lord Lee of Kao shall also require a suite for his beloved ward, Lord Lu of Yu, bellowed One-Eyed Wong, slapping a second gold coin into Miser Shen's hand.
Eh? Said Miser Shen, and a third gold coin smacked into his palm.
Lord Lee of Kao shall also require a suite for his goat, bellowed One-Eyed Wong.
Your master must be made of gold, Miser Shen gasped.
No, One-Eyed Wong said absent-mindedly. His goat is.
A few minutes later, I found myself in Miser Shen's best room with Li Kao, the goat, and the garbage. The fake gold coins were concealed inside fish heads and mildewed mangoes, and Li Kao fed a shovelful of the stuff to the goat. This was followed by a pint of castor oil, and shortly thereafter he raked through the mess on the floor with a pair of silver tongs and extracted 2 glittering coins.
What? He cried. Only 2 gold coins? Miserable beast, do not arouse the wrath of Lord Lee of Kao.
A dull thump from the hallway suggested that Miser Shen had toppled from a peephole in a dead faint. Li Kao gave him time to recover and then tried again with the garbage and castor oil.
4 gold coins? He yelled furiously. Insolent animal! Lord Lee of Kao requires 400 coins a day to maintain the style to which he is accustomed.
The dull thump shook the flimsy wall. After Miser Shen recovered, Master Lee tried for a third time, and now his rage knew no bounds.
6 gold coins? Cretinous creature, have you never heard of geometric progression? 2, 4, 8, not 2, 4, 6. I shall sell you for dog food, and return to the glittering glades of golden grain for a better goat.
The sound of the thump suggested that Miser Shen would be unconscious for quite some time, and Master Lee led me out into the hallway. As we stepped over the prostrate body, he took my arm and said quite seriously, Number 10 Ox, if we are to survive our visit to the ancestress, you must learn that a soldier's best shield is a light heart. If you continue with that long face and soggy soul, you will be the death of us, and we will attend to the matter immediately. He trotted briskly up the stairs and opened doors until he found the right one.
Who are you? Cried Pretty Ping.
My surname is Li, and my personal name is Kao, and there is a slight flaw in my character, he said with a polite bow. This is my esteemed client, Number 10 Ox.
But what are you doing in my bedchamber? Cried Pretty Ping.
I am paying my respects, and my client is preparing to spend the night, said Master Lee.
But where is Miser Shen? Cried Pretty Ping.
Miser Shen is preparing to spend the night with a goat.
A goat?
It will be a very expensive goat.
What are you doing? Cried Pretty Ping.
I am undressing, I said, because I had been well brought up, and I would never dream of contradicting so venerable a sage as Li Kao. Besides, I had been told to obey him by the abbot who was praying for my soul.
I shall scream, cried Pretty Ping.
I sincerely hope so. Ah, if I could only be 90 again.
Master Lee said nostalgically.
"Ox, flex a few muscles for the young lady."
Pretty Ping stared at me as Li Kao turned and trotted back down the stairs. I grinned back at a young lady whose family had fallen into the clutches of a usurer, and whose beauty had condemned her to the embraces of an elderly gentleman who was equipped with a pair of glittering little pig eyes, a bald and mottled skull, a sharp, curving nose like a parrot's beak, the loose, flabby lips of a camel, and two drooping elephant ears from which sprouted thick tufts of coarse gray hair. Her luscious lips parted.
"Help," said Pretty Ping.
The noises downstairs suggested that Miser Shen was acquiring a goat, some castor oil, and a load of garbage, and Pretty Ping and I took the opportunity to get acquainted. In China, when young people wish to become acquainted, they usually start by playing fluttering butterflies, because there is no better way to get to know somebody than to play fluttering butterflies.
"Eat!"
Miser Shen screamed to the goat. After young people have become acquainted, it is customary to warm things up with the Kingfisher Union, because it is impossible to engage in the Kingfisher Union without becoming close friends.
"Gold!"
screamed Miser Shen. A cup of wine is then called for, and a discussion of relative merits that is usually resolved in favor of hounds by the ninth day of autumn.
"Eat!"
screamed Miser Shen. The young gentleman then plays the lute, while the young lady dances in a manner that would cause a riot if performed in public, and they inevitably become entangled in six doves beneath the eaves on a rainy day.
"Gold!"
screamed Miser Shen. Now that friendship has been firmly established, it is but a step and a jump to become soul mates, and the fastest way to become soul mates is Phoenix sporting in the cinnabar crevice.
"Eat!"
screamed Miser Shen. This will lead to wine, love poems, and a return to fluttering butterflies, but slowly and drowsily, accompanied by giggles. And so it goes in China until the dawn, when somebody might calm down enough to consider testing the purity of gold coins.
"What is that appalling stench, O most perfect and penetrating of partners?"
yawned Pretty Ping. "I fear that it marks the approach of Miser Shen, O beauty beyond compare," I said sadly, as I climbed out of bed and pulled on my trousers.
"And what is that angry noise, O most tantalizingly tender of tigers?"
asked Pretty Ping. "I fear that Miser Shen is arming his seven half-starved servants with clubs, O rarest of rose petals." I sighed as I collected my sandals, tunic, jade-embroidered silver girdle, fine-tasseled hat, and gold-splattered Sichuan fan.
"Merciful Buddha! What is the ghastly thing that is oozing obscenely through my doorway?"
howled Pretty Ping. "I fear that it is a mound of goat manure, beneath which you should find Miser Shen. Farewell, O seduction of the universe," I said, and I jumped out the window to the street below. Li Kao was waiting for me, well rested after a pleasant night with Fat Fu and One-Eyed Wong, and he appeared to approve of the sparkle in my eyes. I bent over, and he hopped up upon my back, and then I raced through the streets toward the city walls, while behind us Miser Shen screamed,
"Bring back my 500 pieces of gold!"